I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. A lot of enthusiasm in Benghazi these last days because of the visit of a very significant American senator, John McCain, who was the candidate for president in 2008, and that irony is lost on no one. He visits the Transitional National Council, the Free People of Libya in Benghazi, makes a statement calling them heroic. Within hours, his colleague, Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, Mr. McCain and Mr. Graham were often together in the 2008 campaign. He made it very clear that he thought not enough was being done in order to protect and advance the case of the Transitional National Council of the Free People of Libya. One of the things Mr. Graham recommended, of course, is a decapitation strike on the rascal and devil Gaddafi. So much for the background. Anne Marlowe of the Hudson Institute was 10 days or more in Benghazi. She's now traveling out of country back towards where she started, and I'm very pleased to speak to her. Anne, you were present in Benghazi for John McCain's visit. What was significant about his response he received from the people in Libya?
Well, he was the highest-ranking American to visit yet, and I'd say the most forthright. There is a very nice American envoy in Benghazi, who I also met with, but who is a medium-level diplomat who does not have the national profile, obviously, that our former presidential candidate has. Also, John McCain spoke very, very bluntly. He did not give the Libyan rebels everything they wanted to hear, but he gave them a great deal. He did not say that he thought we should put trainers on the ground. He did not say we should put any Americans on the ground at all, as a matter of fact. But he did say that we should recognize the Transitional Council as the legitimate government of Libya. He said that they've earned that right. Applause broke out in the press conference where he made that announcement, which was quite remarkable. And he also said that he thought there were ways short of American presence on the ground, short of increase in American armaments on the ground that could shift the tide of the war. He mentioned two rather clever ideas. One was improving the rebels' command and control, and the second was taking out Gaddafi's television station, his national television station, which broadcasts appalling nonsense seemingly 24 hours a day. So people had a very positive response to that. There's some feel that the optimum would be, bringing in real American heavy weapons, more predators. We only have two predators. People seem to want more and more and more. But Senator McCain pointed out that that was not necessarily going to be the way to get Gaddafi out. And, I tend to side with him on that one rather than some of the more impetuous Libyans.
Days, we've had several pieces of news. I wanted to pass them by you and see what you'd heard in Benghazi. One was significant to me in that the British and the French are sending trainers into Benghazi or trainers into Cyrenaica or in some fashion military advisors. We talked of this last week. There was more emphasis on it over the weekend. Did you see any evidence of military-to-military contact in Benghazi?
Yeah, the trainers, I haven't seen them, or, they didn't set up and have a press conference for journalists. I would gather that's all happening behind the scenes. People on the Transitional Council I've spoken with have not really, talked about that. There is a general sense that the Americans are behind them now. No one is dumb enough to say anything specific about military matters to a journalist. I think that the most I've had is some information that there may be ways of getting weapons into Misrata and the Western Mountains to help the freedom fighters there. But again, you know, people are not going to disclose their strategic secrets to me. So those discussions are very, very general. I mean, I can also, if you'd like to go into this later, John, I can also tell you about some very interesting visits I had to the major archaeological sites in eastern Libya and what they reveal of what's happened with the government here. There's a lens that they cast on society here, which, you know, I'd like to talk about a little bit if you have the time.
Yeah, please go ahead, Anne.
I interviewed a Libyan archaeologist and his wife, who's also an archaeologist, for a couple of hours a few days ago, telling him that I was preparing to visit the so-called five cities of Cyrenaica, which were all settled by the Greeks under the patronage, let's say, of Apollo, according to legend, and later taken over by the Romans. They vary from enormous, which is Cyrene, to tiny, Tokra. I did get to all of them. And the interesting aspect of this was they were in complete and utter disrepair. I would say an almost Afghan level of disrepair that you would not expect in an oil state and that I did not see in Iraq, for instance. There are dictators who may slaughter their people, but they take care of what they view as the cultural patrimony. But Saddam was one of those. I don't think Gaddafi is one of those. He appears to have had, you know, almost no regard for maintaining these archaeological sites, which are not only part of a cultural heritage of all Libyans, but are a valuable source of hard currency. And the tourist infrastructure in the area is next to non-existent. I saw one tourist-level hotel next to one site, and the rest of them were either closed or non-existent or squalid. The sites themselves were either not labeled at all or had labeling that was clearly decades old. I would say some probably older than I am. And the only inspiring aspect of all of this was that at the greatest site, which has a national profile, Cyrene, which is miles in extent, I did see, I'd say, 100 Libyan families out looking at the monuments, and I suspected that some of them hadn't done that in a long time. Now, part of the reason may be that it was free. They don't have ticket collectors at this time, but I think part of the reason is also that people are feeling pride in their country once again after a long time. I spoke with one Libyan, actually a relative of Mohammed al-Sanusi, who's been on the program, and he told me he hadn't been to Cyrene in years, although he lives a 20-minute drive, and he had never taken any of his five children there, which struck me as kind of astounding. It's like, you know, living next to Mount Vernon or something and not visiting it.
You about Cyrene. According to news reports over the years, the Temple of Zeus was damaged by Gaddafi, and other temples there, I mean, it's a vast site. Other temples there were deliberately targeted by Gaddafi. Did you see any evidence of deliberate destruction?
Not that I could tell, but what I did see at that site and several others were giant signs saying that an Italian cultural organization, the Marco Polo Foundation, had worked alongside the Libyan government in restoring the site. And the signs appeared to be relatively new. The only signs that appeared to be relatively new. There certainly was no evidence of recent deliberate destruction. There was I would say, evidence of extremely shoddy third world standard conservation, with leaking roofs over mosaics that were obviously becoming water damaged. I did not see any deliberate destruction. I did visit the Temple of Zeus. I would say shoddily restored, but I wouldn't say that you could say it was deliberately, it had been deliberately targeted. I'm not familiar with that, but I was working with two different rather old guidebooks because I couldn't get a more current guidebook. I don't know what happened in very recent years.
Let's speak again to Benghazi. When we last spoke, the report was that shops were opening and there was more commercial activity during the day. Is that how you left it, Anne, that each day it's brighter in Benghazi?
Absolutely. But the really fascinating part is that when we drove yesterday and today, I spent outside of Benghazi and other towns and cities in eastern Libya. And in those cities, including Al Baida, life has really returned to normal, and 100% of the shops are open, and they have a far wider range of goods than the shops in Benghazi. And that was very interesting because these are towns of under 100,000, and you can walk into a grocery store that is pretty impressively full, whereas in Benghazi, they're just starting to get chocolate back. So I would say people feel a great deal more secure in places like Tobruk, in places like Al Baida, than they do in Benghazi.
And about the Transitional National Council and about governance there, you attended a number of press conferences. Was there more stability or less as these people have gained attention? Are they standing up to the kind of media exposure that can overwhelm people?
I've been largely impressed by what they said inside the country. I haven't heard anyone make a misstep. I've heard Mr. Goga a couple of times. I've spoken one-on-one with the most prominent woman on the council, Selwa Bugaygus, who's very well-spoken and discreet, diplomatic. I've heard a couple of reports from overseas visits by various Libyan diplomats that, you know, look a little more controversial. People really pushing Egypt, for example. But it's very hard to tell, given the sort of fragmentary nature of these reports, whether they're in fact clearing what they say with some of the NATO powers or with the United States before they say it, or whether they're just, you know, heading on out there. Remember that the most of the people on the council are 50 to 60-year-old lawyers. I think the most common birth year is 1952. So these are polished people. They're people from the apex of Benghazi's professional class, let's say. They are accustomed to speaking in public because most of them were part of this lawyers' union whose protest ignited this rebellion. So I would say you have a fairly discreet and accomplished group of people. That's not to say, however, that they're either A, familiar with international politics, or B, familiar with soundbite journalism. Remember, they don't have soundbite journalism in Libya.
Anne Marlowe of the Hudson Institute, she's traveling. She was almost 2 weeks in Benghazi. She's now traveling back to Egypt. The reporting from Benghazi has been hit or miss, and Anne's explanation of the civil society in Benghazi has been a great revelation to those of us who just have headlines, and headlines pass through the filter of the Europeans. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.